on me? It's time to get it checked, boy. You on the sideline, you ain't made the headlines. Now it's time to reject, boy. You bitten on me? What's the topic of discussion? What you talking about? Take your best shot, I'ma take the last shot. I'm Jordan in the clutch, boy. You bitten on me? It's time to get it checked, boy. You on the sideline, you ain't made the headlines. Now it's time to reject, boy. You bitten on me? What's the topic of discussion? What you talking about?
All righty, guys, that was Pull Up Tay on the intro music. As always, make sure you guys go download his music, man. It's out on all platforms. His latest project is Life Ain't Fair. Go ahead and download that on Apple Music, Spotify, wherever you listen to your music, man. Go ahead and check out my guy, Pull Up Tay. Also just dropped a new visual, him and Nas B, man. So make sure you guys go and check that out, man. So like I did last episode, I'm gonna make sure that I get this in this one as well. Make sure you guys are liking this podcast, subscribing to this podcast, give us a little rating, you know what I'm saying? Make sure you guys are spreading the word, man, so we can get this podcast out to as many people as we possibly can, man. We appreciate every listener. That's tuned in with us, man. So if you guys could just help us out a little bit by, you know, subscribing, liking, telling a friend to tell a friend, man, so we can keep getting the auto bid out to as many people as possible, man. But we're going to go ahead and dive right into it, man. We got a great episode today where we're going to get you guys over to interview with Jaden Daly a little bit later. We're going to dive into the Mac, man, the conference that Drew and I played in. So we're going to make sure that you guys get everything you need to know about that league. Jaden Daly has been covering the Mac for over a decade, man. So he's best you're gonna get as far as coverage of that conference. But as always, man, we're gonna dive into the weekend's action, man. Drew, man, talk to me, man. What games did you have circled on your calendar this weekend, man? What were you watching, man? And what games stick out to you?
Yeah, man. But before we get to kind of some of the major conferences, I want to give some love to a couple of leagues we haven't talked about that much. And starting with the American East Conference. I think that, you know, some games that I had circled on my calendar this week were obviously the NJIT and Vermont game. NJIT was able to get a split at Vermont, you know, on the road there. You know, from playing the EDs at Quinnipiac, man, you know how tough it was, you know, to win at Vermont, man. That's a very tough place to play. Obviously, even, you know, now without the fans, that team is always a team that plays very well at home. You know, Vermont's kind of a new-look team, though. They lost Anthony Lamb, you know, to graduation, one of their all-time, you know, great players there. He just signed the exhibit 10 with the Detroit Pistons, man. So shout out to him, you know, making it to the league from the American East. But, you know, it was a great game, you know, great series. The teams ended up splitting. I'm not going to get too much into detail because we're going to talk a little bit more about this game later, you know, but I think that was a big-time game in the American East. Stony Brook was also able to sweep UMass Lowell and get to 4-0 in that conference. You know, Stony Brook was a team that, you know, a few years ago, you know, they had a lot of success, you know, in the American East. And recently, you know, Vermont has kind of, you know, taken over as the top team in that conference. Obviously, we saw UMBC, you know, sneak in a tournament appearance out of the American East, man. And, you know, speaking of UMBC, they were able to also get a weekend split over Binghamton this weekend, which moves them to 3-1 in the American East. They're now 7-2 overall, man. I think UMBC is playing extremely well, you know, in that conference. I think that they're going to be a player at the end. So I think those were the three games that kind of stuck out to me in that conference. Also in the SoCon, I was able to watch the Wolford and Mercer game. Wolford was able to get a big-time win over Mercer on the road. Storm Murphy scored his 1,000th point in that game, man. The big-time shooter, you know, surprisingly went 0-for-6 from three in that game and was still able to, you know, score 16 points, which kind of speaks to the well-roundedness of his game. You know, he was able to score a lot in the mid-range that game. So I think, you know, Wolford's obviously going to be a player in the SoCon, as they always are. You know, Mercer, I think, being out there, their point guard, Neftali Alvarez, who, you know, crazy enough, man, for my Mac listeners that are going to be on this podcast, you guys remember when Neftali Alvarez from his time at Fairfield. He's now at Mercer, but he didn't play that game versus Wolford the other day. So Wolford was able to take advantage and steal a road win. So those are kind of my, you know, some of my ticket games. I also like, I want to give a shout out to Norfolk State, who was able to get a big time win over George Mason. You know, anytime you know a MEAC program can go on the road and get a win in the A-10, you know, it's huge. So definitely want to shout out those guys over at Norfolk. Shout out those guys in the MEAC always for, you know, being competitive, man. As you know, Ace, you know, it's hard, man. When you know, in the MEAC, a lot of times, man, we're playing. If we play 10 non-conference games, you're going to have 7 or 8 of them on the road, you know, at least, you know. And a lot of those games are going to be bye games. We're playing against Power 5 teams, A-10 teams, you know, teams that, you know, we're not really favored to win, you know, in a lot of those games. So, you know, for Norfolk to be able to go on the road, get an A-10 win over George Mason, definitely want to give a shout-out to those guys, man. But, you know, for me, you know, my game of the week in our, you know, honorary mid-major, you know, I guess everyone knows they're not really a mid-major, you know, but I guess, you know, WCC, technicality, they're mid-major. Gonzaga, obviously able to throttle UVA, man. Put up 98 points, man. Corey Kispert goes 9-for-13 from three. Drew Timmy also chips in 29 points. You know, I wonder where his 29-point performance was when they matched up against Luka Garza in my scoring wager. Still wouldn't have beat him, but, I mean, 29 and 30, you know. But it's crazy, man, because UVA – had not allowed a team to shoot over 40% the entire season. And Gonzaga comes in and they shoot 60% in this game, shoot 68% in the second half. I mean, they put up an extraordinary offensive performance, man. And I think that this team is literally just, I believe that was their fourth win over a ranked opponent in the non-conference, which, you know, kind of puts to bed, you know, that Gonzaga doesn't play anybody, or they're in the WCC, you know, every week conference. I mean, they have the most wins over ranked opponents this season. And they're looking like I said, like we mentioned many times before on this podcast, man, they're not looking like they're going to lose until Selection Sunday, man. I don't really see that happening. But, you know, we'll see. Like you mentioned, the WCC is always a great conference with some great games. But, you know, as for me, those are the games that I had circled on my calendar that, you know, I was looking forward to this week. So shout out to each one of those teams for getting some big time win and, you know, giving us a great slate of games over the last week.
Yeah, one stat from that game that I want to point out from that Gonzaga UVA game. I mean, this kind of just shows how absurd Gonzaga is offensively. I mean, they averaged 1.485 points per possession versus UVA, which is the most points per possession that UVA has ever allowed under Tony Bennett. The previous high was 1.437. So, I mean, they knocked that out of the water. Highest point per possession ever allowed to a Tony Bennett team. And obviously, we know how great defensively those guys over at UVA are, man. So for Gonzaga to go in there and hang a 98 piece on Virginia is absurd. I mean, we've seen them win games, you know, holding teams to like 20 and 30 points. I mean, it's absolutely absurd how good that Gonzaga team is, and we've talked about it at length on this podcast. So I'm with you, Drew. I mean, I pray that Scott Drew and Mark Few can get on the phone and schedule this game between Baylor and Gonzaga, man. I really want to see it because Baylor's elite defensively. We know Gonzaga is elite offensively, man. So I think that'll be just a clash of two teams. Even though we just saw, you know, Gonzaga scorch a team in Virginia that's elite defensively, you know, I think Baylor would provide a little bit of a different look just because of how athletic they are. You know, you got guys like Mark Vidal. Guys, obviously, Maceo Teague and Jared Butler is one of the best backcourts, if not the best backcourt in the country. So that would just be a fun matchup that I hope we can get done. So, but I want to backtrack a little bit to the America East that you were talking about earlier. I think this is really a changing of the guard a little bit in that conference, man. I mean, obviously, Vermont had won 4 straight regular season championships. Up to this year, it was looking like, man, that streak is going to end this year. Stony Brook is currently 4-0 in the league. They play extremely well as of late, man. I mean, Stony Brook, the team, you got 4 guys averaging double figures. I mean, they're all between 10 and 13 points a game. So they're kind of a do-it-by-committee team. You know, they got 6 guys averaging at least 8 points per game. So, I mean, it kind of reminds me of those Villanova teams, man, where you had, you know, a bunch of guys, 6-7 dudes, but, you know, averaging between 8 and 16. You know, I think Stony Brook kind of this same way. I mean, they're extremely well-coached and tough. And obviously, we know NJIT is really good. I mean, this is their first year in that league from the Atlantic Sun. They're a tough team. So I think that league this year, and then you mentioned, of course, UMBC. So I think between Vermont, you know, Stony Brook, UMBC, and NJIT. I think those are the best four teams in the league. Thorny Brook is looking like the favorite right now. So it's definitely going to get going to be interesting to see, you know, who comes out of that conference over there in the America East.
No, for sure, man. I think obviously, you know, we know the strength of the Atlantic Sun, you know, over the past couple of years, you know, with teams like, you know, Liberty and Florida Gulf Coast. So NJIT definitely brings a bit of pedigree to the American East this year. So I think that they're definitely not going to be a slouch. And we saw that, you know, them being able to go to Vermont and get a win on the road. So I think that conference is definitely going to be very interesting this year. And, you know, I guess we'll have to see what happens come conference tournament time, man.
Yep. One thing that I definitely have to highlight, my biggest surprise of this early season has been Drake. I mean, nobody's talking about this team. Drake is 11-0 out of the Missouri Valley, man. They went to Terre Haute this weekend and swept Indiana State to get to 11-0, man. I mean, I think the Drake team could be for real, man. I mean, they got a win over Kansas State. We know Kansas State isn't the team that they've been in recent memory. But anytime you can go, you know, and beat a Power 5 team, it definitely says a lot, man. I mean, I think this team is going to be a player in the Missouri Valley. They have a big time series this weekend against Southern Illinois, who was 7-1. Southern Illinois actually just took their first loss to Evansville this weekend. They split this weekend series with Evansville, one apiece. So now Southern Illinois sits at 7-1. But I think, you know, going back to this Drake team, I think their next two series are going to tell us a whole lot about that team. I mean, they're playing, like I said, Southern Illinois, and then they got Loyola Chicago, who is a lot of people's favorite in that Missouri Valley. So I think these next two weekends will show us a lot as far as, you know, if this Drake team is for real, man. But right now, they are looking every bit the part of a serious contender out of the Missouri Valley, man. So definitely want to make sure that I shout them out and gave them some love as well.
Not for sure, man. The Missouri Valley is always one of those tough, tough mid-major leagues, man. You know, we know what Loyola Chicago is going to bring to the table, obviously, with that Final Four pedigree. You know, Porter Moser still there coaching his team, so we know that they're going to be there at the end of the year. So I definitely do have that Drake and Loyola Chicago game circled on my calendar, man. And I think that there's a lot of other good teams in this league, man. We obviously, Bradley, they haven't played a conference game yet, but they're 6-3. We know that they're
– Iowa.
Yeah, you know, they've been in the tournament. So, I mean, I think this conference is definitely going to be very interesting by the time, you know, March Madness comes around. You know, God willing, we get there. But I think anytime you can, you know, win 11 games, man, get to 11-0, no matter who it's against, man, I think that says a lot. So, definitely want to shout out to Drake, man, because they're a team that's, you know, been obviously making some noise.
Yep, for sure, man. I mean, without further ado, man, we do want to get you over to the MAC, man. That's the one conference that we haven't mentioned because, you know, we're going to take a deep dive into it right now, man. So without further ado, we're going to get you guys over to that interview with Jaden Daly of Daily Dose of Hoops. So here we go. All righty, guys. All Facts Media here for another episode of the Auto Bed. Today we have a special guest. We're joined by Jaden Daly, the creator of the Daily Dose of Hoops platform. So, Jaden, man, thanks for hopping on with us today.
Aaron, my pleasure. After you had my boy Steve Masiello on, I was hoping you guys would come around to me. So I'm honored to finally get the chance to come on with you guys. Thanks so much for making this happen.
No problem at all, man. So we're going to go ahead and get right to it, man. But first, we want to, you know, let the viewers know a little bit about yourself, man. So talk to us a little bit about, you know, your platform and your coverage and you know, the things that you got going on in the media world right now.
Absolutely. This is the 14th year I'm doing this. I hate to date myself, but since 2007 and 2009 with my website, which I started in the event that I couldn't get any on-air broadcast work, has happened. I cover pretty much anything and everything in the New York area with a focus on the MAC, as you guys have seen from your playing days in Quinnipiac and now to your second careers here in this media industry alongside myself and so many of our other contemporaries on Twitter at Daily Dose of Hoops, D-A-L-Y Dose of Hoops. You pop it into Google, it'll be the first thing you find, and you'll have pretty much everything you need to know about the MAC, about local New York teams, St. John, Seton Hall, Rutgers, Hofstra as well. If it's in the area and I'm able to get to you, I'll have something on you in one way, shape, or form.
Nice, man. So, obviously, we know, man, like you mentioned, we get real familiar with you from your time covering the MAC. This season, man, the MAC has been definitely interesting thus far. You know, we have a lot of teams who, such as Siena and Quinnipiac, who haven't been able to play a MAC game yet. Then we have a couple other teams, obviously, who have been able to get off to pretty good starts, man. So, give us your early thoughts based on just what you've seen in the MAC thus far. Maybe teams that surprised you or teams that kind of have gotten out to a good start thus far that you're really impressed with.
Well, Andrew, I'm surprised that Iona has been able to go 3-1 early in the year after everything Rick Pitino mentioned about how much of a struggle it was going to be implementing his new system and getting 3/4 of his roster new to Division I for the first time, be it from junior college, be it overseas, and only having 4 returning players, one of whom, Colton Cashaw, hasn't even been able to play due to injury. But he has continuity, Isaiah Ross, Dylan Van Eyck, Asante Gist. They've blended with some of the newer talent. Nelly Jr. Joseph reminds me a lot of young Ramel Brown, who played at Manhattan and won 3 Defensive Player of the Year awards in the early part of the last decade. Iona has been inconsistent, but to be 3-1 this early through the MAC season, I think is an accomplishment for that group. I've been impressed by St. Peter's and how that team has been able to play with brass stones, fearless, unfazed by any stage or any moment. That team is a reflection of Shaheen Holloway's demeanor. He doesn't get too high, he doesn't get too low, and he's carried his temperament and his enthusiasm into his players, and you can sense it how unified they are on the court, how fluid they are. This team almost beat St. John's on opening night with just 2 weeks of 5-on-5 practice and having to play practice off-site and play off-site. Yannatelli Center is being renovated. They're playing in a Division III gym. They're practicing in a closed high school. So to get that kind of performance early in the year, you can't ask for much more. And I've been impressed by Monmouth as well. I saw the 2 games against Canisius the last 2 days and the split against St. Peter's last weekend. Another team coming off multiple shutdowns. Kane Rice was worried about how it would affect his team early on. First game out, they put up 88 points against Hofstra with 3 returning starters from a CAA championship team. I always said throughout the offseason that Monmouth was still going to be good even without Ray Salnave. A lot of people had something to say about that, but you look at the Hawks right now through 4 games, they're 3-1, and they are a contender. Just up there with St. Peter's, with Siena, when Siena finally gets its season underway this weekend against Monmouth, oddly enough. Iona will be forwardly placed, but I want to see how the rest of the season takes its toll on the Gales. You look at the MAC right now, it's at least a 3-man race between St. Peter's, Monmouth, and Siena.
There's a bunch of things that you touched on just now that I don't want to get your opinion on. But first, we'll start with Monmouth and Canisius. I mean, last night, over the weekend, obviously, Monmouth was able to get that sweep. Talk about a little bit more about Monmouth. I mean, obviously, we had King Rice on here earlier on our platform, and he was talking about, you know, how they were going to have, you know, 4 seniors back. With Papas has looked really well. Diamond totally is throwing the team and scoring right now. I mean, Drew and I have said, you know, throughout the offseason that they might have the best backcourt in the MAC, you know, with Totally and Hammond and with, you know, with Papas in there as well. So, I mean, just talk a little bit about Monmouth and, you know, the backcourt that they have and how you think that they stack up with the rest of the top teams in the MAC.
I do agree with you on that, Aaron. I think Monmouth does have the deepest backcourt in the conference. You look at Deion Hammond and his potential, his caliber going into his senior season. This guy could be the MAC player of the year, depending on what Jalen Pickett does at Siena. George Pappas has improved so much over the offseason. It was mentioned on one of the early broadcasts that his brother is a personal trainer, and his brother set up a home gym during the offseason because the gyms were obviously closed due to COVID. Pappas and Deion Hammond trained together. Deion had no gym access in his home in Maryland, so he came up to New Jersey, trained with George Pappas. You can see the two of them have bulked up this offseason. They've worked on their shooting form, and they have more improved team chemistry. That helps too. And you throw in Donovan Totley, who played with Hammond in high school and is used to playing on and off the ball from his freshman year at Chattanooga. He's a versatile combo guard, which is exactly what Monmouth needed with Salnave transferring to DePaul. Those three, Samuel Shepu is a better passer and a more underrated passer than people give him credit for. He's one of the better facilitators in this conference. You throw those four in there with Marcus McLary, who can play the four and really space the floor out for the Hawks. Monmouth can play small. Monmouth can play big, too. You saw what Nike Ruddy could do. Jarvis Vaughn had some foul trouble against Canisius in the two games. But when he gets back to 100%, he's just as good as anybody, and he's a redshirt freshman, too. Monmouth is deep. Monmouth is versatile. And I think that combination is what's going to win this group games. Maybe not necessarily a MAC championship. If they get the right draw in Atlantic City, if we get to that point, optimistically we will. This is a team that could surprise a lot of people and take a lot of people out in the process.
For sure, man. And we actually had Deion Hammond and Donovan Toley on this platform as well. And I'm looking at the box score from the game this weekend. I mean, Donovan Toley had 16 points in 18 minutes. And King Rice was talking about his ability to kind of come off the bench. Oh, actually, he was talking about his ability to just be able to score. You know, he said that he's one of the guys who came to this program who, like, nobody could kind of guard him. You know, and I think that having that guy right now, he's coming off the bench for Monmouth, having a guy like that who can come off the bench and score like that, I mean, I don't know. I think it definitely is going to give a lot of teams a lot of problems down the line, especially if they can figure out how to get him to kind of take better shots, you know, be a little bit more efficient. That's what King Rice was telling us when he came on. I think that they could definitely be a sleeper.
Absolutely. And you mentioned Totley's ability to score off the bench. It reminds me a lot of what Niagara had last season with James Towns in his senior year, coming off the bench, running the point, running the offense, and putting up 14, 15 points a night and being able to really run the offense and enable guys like Marcus Hammond and Raheem Solomon to have great seasons last year for the Purple Eagles. I get that vibe from watching Donovan Toley, even through five games. It's enough of a sample size for me. Deion Hammond called him a firecracker after one of the St. Peter's games for his ability to just come in and ignite himself and the players around him. He just makes so many people better. And the best part about him is he's got two more years after this. The sky's the limit for him. I really think so.
A little earlier, you were talking about Iona and how they've been able to get off to a 3-1 start. And a big part of that has been Isaiah Ross' development. I mean, this is a guy who was more than double his scoring output, average 11. He's averaging over 22 a game this year. Career highs and all across the board, field goal percentage, three-point percentage, points, rebounds, assists. I mean, talk about his development this year and how important that has been to Rick Pitino's squad over there at Iona.
The best thing about Isaiah Ross is – he already has experience in a similar system from before he got to Iona. When he played his first 2 years at UMKC, the head coach was Kareem Richardson, who was an assistant to Rick Pitino at Louisville. So Isaiah Ross had a little bit of a leg up compared to his teammates as far as learning and understanding how Pitino wanted to play, pressing, running, really getting open on the wing. And something that didn't happen last year, I don't want to necessarily blame it on not having Tim Kloos around, but Isaiah Ross wasn't able to really find his own shot last season the way he has this season. He's become a trusted scorer. He's starting to do a little more without the ball in his hands, which is something Pitino wanted to see after the opening night loss to Seton Hall. He came out and said he played poorly despite putting up over 20 points. He didn't have an assist that night. He's done better getting his teammates involved and being able to create shots for others. But when the ball is in his hands and you see it with him, he's almost is as close as you can come to an automatic bucket through the first 5-6 weeks of the year. And for a team like Iona, finding its stride collectively and getting 10 new players to adjust to the Division I speed, that's such a godsend right now at this time.
For sure, man. And, you know, for me, man, obviously as a guy who, like, has been watching college basketball for a while, man, and seeing Coach Pitino, you know, win a championship at Louisville, and it's crazy to see it all come full circle with him now being at Iona and kind of just seeing how he will fit into the rest of the coaches in the league, man, and where his team will stack up. Because, you know, originally it's like, dang, man, he's going to come in and take over a program like Iona, who's coming off four straight MAC championships with Tim Kloos, and now they're going to just get Pitino in there and keep it rolling. I mean, what do you think this team could be by the end of the season?
Depending on what Monmouth, St. Peter's, and Siena do, Iona could be right there with those leaders. I wouldn't necessarily say this team could win the MAC championship. They can, but there are a lot of teams ahead of them. and the competition is stiff, but there's no reason why this group should not be a top half team, especially given how they've played more often than not through the first month of the year.
Now, right now, there are currently four teams atop the standings, tied at 3-1. You've got Monmouth, Marist, St. Peter's, and Iona all sitting there at 3-1. I mean, what's been the biggest – I mean, I know for me personally, I didn't think Marist was going to start 3-1. I mean, I saw that actually they were able to get that sweep over Fairfield. I mean, talk about a little bit about Marist. And I know John Dunn is now, what is it, year three, I want to say, over there at Marist. I mean, mm-hmm. he had some great teams over at St. Peter's when he was there. And the first 2 years kind of struggled a little bit at Marist, but he's looking like this year they're off to a pretty good start over there.
I didn't think Marist would start 3-1 in the MAC either. This is the program's best start in 20 years from when Marist had just joined the MAC a few years prior to that from the NEC, and they're doing this with Michael Cubbage, the best player on the roster when you look at last year's stats, out for the season. He's got a broken bone in his foot. He's probably out for the rest of the year. What John Dunn has done is he's gotten two freshman guards, Hakeem Bird and Ricardo Wright, to really be a 1-2 punch in terms of opening and closing games. And you saw that against Manhattan when Marist swept the Jaspers at Draddy Gymnasium. Wright started one game, Bird finished it, and then it was the other way around the next time. And what John Dunn did that is going to pay dividends for this team as the year goes on, first two non-conference games, back-to-back, true home and home with Binghamton, playing Saturday and Sunday, one gym and the other, preparing this group for the Friday-Saturday nature of conference play. That has already come back to work wonders for this group. And in 2020, where the unexpected has taken over pretty much every way of life possible, I guess it's appropriate that John Dunn is tied for first place in the MAC right now with a group that nobody expected to be there. It's just typical John Dunn, and it might be his best coaching job yet, no disrespect to what we've all seen him do at St. Peter's over the years.
Not for sure. Another thing that you said, man, that was really interesting, man. Our last episode was with C.J. Holloway, and I did not know that they were playing in a D3 gym and was practicing in a high school. Like, I never knew that until he told us last week, and I was like, yo, like, I mean, when you said that his team takes on his personality, I mean, that's a fact, man. And those guys, they play hard, they're tough. I mean, it's no secret, man. Even before the gym got renovated, St. Peter's wasn't a glorious facility. You know, you go there and it's like the rims are hard. You look like a YMCA gym, you know. But they still find ways to win. You know, they defend. The games are usually always low scoring. They beat teams with scoring like 50 points. And I mean, this year's team, it's kind of more the same, man. Those guys are really tough. They have a lot of different guys that can score it. Obviously, they have Casey and Defo, who was, you know, defensive player of the year last year and everything. I mean, when you talk about that team, like, obviously last year they were also able to defeat Iona, man, in the MAC tournament. So, I mean, this is a team that a lot of people were expecting to kind of be towards the top of the league and maybe be able to win it all this year. Kind of what have you seen from them thus far, and, you know, where do you think they can be at by the end of the season?
My biggest concern, Drew, with St. Peter's this season was going to be how it would handle legitimate expectations for the first time under Shaheen Holloway. This group is not disappointed. They've exceeded those expectations. You look at last season where anybody could go off on any given night, and that's ringing true again this year. You mentioned Casey Nadefo, but how about Darryl Banks? How about Doug Eddard, who hit a game-winning three against Monmouth last Saturday to earn a hard-fought split on the Jersey Shore? Matthew Lee is probably the best point guard in the conference that nobody's talking about. He had 9 assists in one game earlier this season. You mentioned the depth and some of the younger players. Marty Silvera from the Patrick School in New Jersey has done very well coming off the bench. He's got a graduate transfer in Tarajay Brake, who played in a Division II level, but he's adapted very well. A graduate transfer in Noah Kamba from Murray State. He's got depth to go with his younger, experienced group who gained critical battle-tested experience last season in St. Peter's resurgence. This group could go back-to-back if everybody comes back next season. They're 3-1, and I almost feel like it's a disappointment because they're just getting better every time out.
Now, one team that's kind of gone off to a slow start is Manhattan. And I apologize in the last question. I said that Marist swept Fairfield. Marist swept Manhattan, who was one of the teams that we picked. Me and Drew and I thought that we're going to be toward the top. I mean, they had a lot of guys coming back. They added, you know, great transfer. Like, Ant Nelson's off to a crazy start. Jason Douglas Stanley, Alpha Diallo. And as we all know, Steve Masiello is one of the best coaches in the league. So, I mean, me and Drew – we had some high expectations for the Jaspers, and that Marist sweep was extremely surprising to us. So, I mean, talk about Manhattan and what you think is going wrong for them early on.
It was surprising to me, too. But I think the effects of being shut down right before the season started and then really having to go into the fire cold in conference play against Marist to start the year and then before that against Ryder – really hurt this team, given the way that Masiello plays, wants to really push the ball and then be the most physical team in the conference. That style takes a lot out of you. And when you're not properly conditioned to run it, it can get ugly real fast. And we saw that against Ryder the first game against the Bronx, and we saw that the first game against Marist. But one thing that Masiello has done, he's been able to get his team to bounce back probably better than anybody the second time around. You look at Anthony Nelson, he's the best point guard that this program has had since Mike Alvarado graduated in 2014, a guy who can really do it all. He's clearly on another level when he's on the floor from his time at Seton Hall. He has the perfect size and length to be a dominant guard in this league. What I want to see more from Manhattan, though, is the front line staying out of foul trouble. Guys like Warren Williams asserting themselves, Elijah Buchanan taking the next step and being more of an Emmy Andujar, Rich Williams type of player who can go get you 7 or 8 rebounds just as fast as he can get you 15 points. Samba Diallo is still a work in progress. I want to see what this Manhattan team does come January and February when it usually plays its best basketball. I'm not too concerned by the 1-3 start because I knew coming off of a shutdown, it would be a difficult start to the year. I want to see how this group starts off 2021.
Yes. I mean, I think the perfect segue kind of to my next question is going to be the preseason MAC favorites in Siena. They're going to be coming off a shutdown, man, where they haven't even played a single game this season yet. You know, Quinnipiac is also shut down, but they were able to get 4 games in before shutdown. I mean, what are we expecting from Siena, you know, when the shutdown is over, when they finally get on the court? Are we expecting them to kind of look like that first-place team, or you need to take them a while to kind of get going?
Maybe not right away, especially since they're playing Monmouth Sunday and Monday. It's right. A tough draw for anybody in the conference, never mind one who's had 3 shutdowns and hasn't been able to play a non-conference game. So I want to see how the Saints come out. And remember, this is – a roster that brings back 2 first-team all-conference talents. But you look at everybody that's left. Gary Harris Jr. just transferred last week to Loyola Marymount. Dana Tate left the team earlier in the season. Aiden Carpenter is a freshman. You look at the 2 grad transfers that Carmen Mastarella brought in, Nick Hopkins from Belmont, Harrison Curry from Detroit. Kyle Yeon and Jordan Kane are going in their sophomore year, so they're going to be counted on to do a lot more than they normally would have if guys like Harris were still around, if the seniors that were there last season, like Elijah Burns, had another year. Siena's retooled. They still have Pickett and they still have Camper, and that's going to count for a lot, but I wouldn't expect Siena to light the scoreboard on fire the first couple weeks against Monmouth and Canisius. I could see a 2-2 start. I could see a 3-1 start, but I wouldn't set the bar too high as far as the Saints are concerned, given the fact that there was no non-conference season for them.
Now, from one shutdown team, we're going to go to another team that shut down, me and Drew's alma mater, Quinnipiac. The Quinnipiac is now on their second shutdown. It's unsure as to when they're going to be able to come back, as they're still waiting some results, some tests over there. But what do you think about Quinnipiac and how they stack up in the MAC? I mean, me personally, I think I can see them – I mean, the MAC, honestly – once you get past Siena and St. Peter's, I mean, I think Monmouth as well. There's a bunch of teams in there that could kind of finish anywhere from 4 to 7. You know, obviously you got Iona, mm-hmm. You got Quinnipiac, you got a bunch of teams that Niagara is going to be there. I mean, where do you think Quinnipiac stacks up, you know, in the league, you know, with the rest of those teams?
Well, I didn't see much of the Bobcats in the non-conference season, so they're still a little bit of a question mark to me. But as you mentioned, the middle of the conference is so wide open. There's really not much of a gap from 4 or 5 to 9 or 10, so to speak. And Baker Dunleavy's group falls right into that. I'd like to see what Jacob Rigoni is doing now as really the face of the roster and the more capable option offensively, being almost the guy along with Tyrese Williams. Brendan McGuire looks like he's made a significant improvement going into his sophomore year. He's back at 100% now. I've heard great things about Taimu Shenry. I've heard great things about Elias King, two of the freshmen that Baker brought in this season. The jury's still out until I finally get a chance to look at this group firsthand, but there's no reason why they're not good enough to finish maybe in that 5-6-7 range. They can contend for a bye. They did it last year, and they bring enough back. Also, Matt Blanc and Savion Lewis, two of the deep guards in this conference. We talked about how deep Monmouth's backcourt is. Quinnipiac's not too far behind. The pieces are there. I'd like to see how this group goes into January and February, but they're a middle-of-the-pack team. At least that's their floor. I think the ceiling's more like a 3-4-5 type.
Yeah, I agree. I think when we look at Quinnipiac, like you mentioned, a guy like Tyrese Williams, who was a preseason, you know, all-conference selection along with Jacob Rigoni. I think when you have somebody like Tyrese, who started since his freshman year, same with Jake, been, you know, played 3 years in the MAC, this is going to be his fourth year, man. They have guys who have played some games, man. And I think when you look at the conference, man, and you look around, I think there's going to be a lot of teams who are adding new pieces to the mix. Obviously, we're talking about Manhattan, trying to get them transfers to jail, things like that. So even a guy like you mentioned, Savion Lewis, who's been around the program for a while, man. This is obviously he played last year before he got hurt, but I think Quinnipiac has a lot of pieces and a lot of guys who have kind of been around, know what Baker Dunleavy wants, know how he wants to play. I think that will kind of help them when it comes to conference play, with maybe compared to teams like Iona, who are still maybe trying to find themselves and get all the pieces to fit together, like a team like Manhattan, like that you also mentioned.
I agree with that, and I also want to throw Ryder into this group since we're talking about teams adding new pieces and the job that Dwight Murray has done for Kevin Baggett already. Had a 20-15 7-assist game earlier in the year, and this group almost beat St. John's as well back on December 8th. I think Murray might go down as one of the best guards Kevin Baggett has ever had, and that says a lot when you look at guys like Stevie Jordan and guys like Teddy Okeyrafer before that have come in and been all-conference talents in Lawrenceville. Dwight Murray has impressed me almost every time out. Dontrell McCorder and Ajiri Ogumuno-Johnson have done well carrying the load on the interior for a Ryder team that lost Demencio Vaughn, lost Tyre Marshall, and lost Fred Scott, three great pieces up front who could play the 3, 4, and 5, and you'd lock them in and you knew what you were going to get from them. Ryder's 1-3 in conference play, but Kevin Baggett has done a great job with a group that only brought back four players, and one of whom, Christian Ames, was really the only one who saw major minutes as the backup to Stevie Jordan last year. It was easy to pick Ryder last just on paper with not many players coming back, but this group's going to be much better than that. And I also like Niagara in that same vein as well. You look at a guy like Kobe Nwandu, and when I see him, I'm reminded of Emi Andujar almost, a guy who could score and rebound. Also Jermaine Crumpton up at Canisius, who won Player of the Year, a guy that can stretch the floor, play bigger if he has to, and be a double-double threat. When you got that with Marcus Hammond, you got two players who could really impact games, and the job Greg Paulus did last year shouldn't be ignored. When you look at Massarello and you look at Shaheen Holloway and what they did, there was a third coach who did great things with his team in his first year as well, and that was Greg Paulus, who has the foundation in place for a great run again this year.
Yep. Now, I want to get your thoughts on the schedule, and we were talking to Shaheen Holloway last week, and he kind of brought up an interesting point. Like, so the MAC is obviously one of many conferences that are playing these two games on back-to-back days, and what Coach Holloway said was that the MAC doesn't need to do that, you know, save for Niagara and Canisius. You know, every team is within, you know, an hour, 2 hours, maybe 3 hours max drive. You know, if you're in New York, you know, you can get to Jersey or Connecticut, you know, in an hour, 2 hours. You know, I know at Quinnipiac, Iona and Monmouth were an hour away. Marist was an hour away. Fairfield was obviously in-state. You know, St. Peter's was about an hour and a half away in Jersey City. I mean, you can get to – the travel is pretty doable in the MAC. So, I mean, do you think that the MAC got it right with going to these back-to-back games, or do you think that the MAC, you know, could have just had their, you know, their normal slate? Because they had – put out a conference schedule originally a couple of weeks back where they had, you know, they had it laid out pretty nicely. And I actually gave them probably, yo, the MAC came out and they have these weeklies where they have spaces for makeover, for makeup games if guys can't play. And I thought it looked pretty good. I mean, what are your thoughts on the way on, you know, them kind of backtracking to do this back-to-back games in conference play?
I get where Rich Ensor was coming from with that, and I know Shaheed Holloway is not a fan of playing back-to-back. He mentioned that on the coach's conference call earlier this month as well before he came on with you guys. But I get why the MAC did it. It was more of a safety issue than anything else. And Rich Ensor, when I spoke to him in the offseason, had mentioned that they were testing greater than the NCAA and CDC recommendations at that time. So they were testing further and in greater depth, which made it easier to do the, I think it was Tuesday, Friday or whatever it was in the initial schedule. Yeah. But then when you saw flare-ups and spikes in various other parts of the country, it was easy to do the Friday, Saturday back-to-back. I think the one gripe that I have, though, is not being able to do a true home and home where you have one site for both games. And I think what that does is it hurts the rivalries in some instances. And I get fans not being able to attend, and that's another issue. But you look at Manhattan and Iona, there's no reason why you can't have one game in New Rochelle and one game in the Bronx. They're 15 minutes apart, for God's sake. The same for Niagara and Canisius, the same for Quinnipiac and Fairfield, for Monmouth and Ryder. You have schools that are so commutable, and I get the Buffalo schools throwing a wrench in all of that and having an unbalanced lead with 11 teams, but there's no reason to me why you couldn't at least try to do a true home and home. If you wanted to do back-to-backs, I'm okay with that, but why not do one game here, one game there?
Yeah, I agree, man. So kind of changing gears a little bit, man. You're somebody who's been covering the MAC for a while, man. And I want to kind of talk about some of the players that come through this league, man. I remember, you know, for me, like before I came to the MAC, when I was at Putnam Science Academy, this is when Manhattan was coming off their back-to-back wins, man. They had, you know, Emmy Andujar and Aston Pankey and what's my boy name?
Shane Richards.
Shane Richards, like, mm-hmm. You know. I mean, obviously, Iona, man, with the David Lowry's and AJ English. I mean, there's been some crazy, crazy teams in there from Iona and Manhattan, all, of course, in the rest of the league as well. But, you know, for you, man, looking back on your time in the MAC, like, you know, what are some of your favorite players, favorite teams that you look back to? Maybe some teams you look back to, you're like, hey, man, like, that team was really crazy. Maybe these fans might now, that are listening right now, maybe may not remember or, you know, oh, man, yeah, that's right.
You guys are going to get me, because I'm going to leave somebody out and somebody's going to light me up on Twitter later. So I want to thank you guys for that now. But I look at 10 years covering this league now. Jeez, I'm old. That's number one. Guys like Justin Robinson and those two Monmouth teams. You mentioned AJ English. You mentioned all the great players at Manhattan, George Beeman, Ramel Brown, Shane Richards, Emmy Andujar, Mike Alvarado, Scott Machado, my first year covering the MAC when he was the player of the year and got a triple-double against Marist. Tyler Nelson put up great numbers at Fairfield, and he kind of gets lost in the shuffle because his team really didn't get to do much until his senior year. And guys that were before your time at Quinnipiac, Ike Azatam, Usman Drame, Zaid Hurst, guys who could play on any level. Zaid Hurst shut Gary Payton Jr. out when Quinnipiac beat Oregon State at home in, I forget what year it is. It was either 2000.
Me and Drew were actually there for that game because we were at Putnam Science Academy. And so we were like, you know what, let's go out there and watch this game. We saw that game, and we saw the game. They beat Manhattan at home, and Z held St. Richards to a zero during that same year.
I called that game from Manhattan Radio. And wow. I remember that. That was the last time I was in Hamden. Shane Richards went 0-for-11, got shut out by Zaid Hurst. I still talk about that game. I had John Alba from Q30, who's now in Orlando, on with me at halftime. That was a great night.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I know for me personally, man, my favorite player in the MAC all time is Billy Barron. I mean, that dude was unreal. I remember I was in high school watching his highlights. Yo, how is this dude not in the NBA? Like, how is this dude not first round, second. Like, he did things with the basketball that way. I mean, he went on the road and gave Notre Dame like 33 or something that. He torched, I mean, I think it was like Rutgers. He blew up. I mean, it was game night in, night out. He was giving dudes 30. I think him, AJ English, Ty Nelson was probably the hardest dude I ever had to guard, like, in college. I mean, chasing him off all them pin down screens. But I mean, Billy Brad for me was that player that I was like, man, this dude is unbelievable. Like, how is he not playing at, you know, one of the blue blood? Obviously, he started at Virginia and then went to URI and ended up at Canisius after. But I mean, I thought he was an NBA player playing the Mac. I mean, he was just so fun to watch. You know, and I know a lot of the young bucks, whenever I show a kid, I'm like, yo, man, I know young kids don't know nothing about Billy Barron, man. I'll pull up his highlight, they're like, yo, this dude is cold. But that dude was amazing to watch, man.
Yeah, Billy's going to be putting up 40 and 50 on YMCA dudes in another 20 years. That's right. Those Iona Canisius games when it was Billy against Sean Armand and Billy against AJ English, those were amazing. You look at guys of that era, too. Odiana City at Siena, Rakim Sanders his last year at Fairfield. So many great players when you think about it. Wanya Green at Niagara before he transferred to Hofstra, Momo Jones at Iona. The list goes on, really. You tend to forget sometimes the amount of talent that comes through the MAC and how great it is for mid-major basketball to keep these guys year in, year out, and watch them develop, watch them grow. You can put together all-star teams just based on everybody that's been there. And you talk about those Canisius teams of Billy. What about the people around him? The Cassius Robertsons of the world, Malik Johnson, Phil Valenti, Kiefer Dowse, Jermaine Crumpton. It always amazed me how those Canisius teams were never able to break through. Credit to Iona and Manhattan for carrying the conference, but those Canisius teams were so underrated.
Yeah. Because Cassius Robertson literally went to Missouri and was first team all SEC like a year after leaving the MAC, man. And me and Ace were just literally talking about Canisius the other day. And we were talking about Ace. What's my guy? Phil Valenti. Yeah. Phil Valenti, man. I was like, yo, he was a great player too in the MAC that people kind of forget about, man. I remember we played against him my freshman year. Canisius definitely has had some guys over the years, man, and kind of falling in the radar. And I agree too, man. What was the guy's name that led the nation in scoring and then transferred to Auburn?
Antoine Mason.
Yeah. I mean, like, it's like you can go to like so many different schools, man. They had guys that were just crazy.
Mm-hmm. And we can't forget our guy. I know he hears this. He go hate it. So I'm gonna mention my guy Ken Young in there. Gotta mention him in there. I know he gonna get on.
He only dropped 55.
Right? He only had 55, average 23 a game, was playing the first division in Italy his first year out of school. So I definitely got to throw my guy in there. He's one of the best players to come through the MAC the past couple years as well. So shout out to my guy, Cam Young, if you're listening to this.
Player of the year. Hey, so I actually want to ask you, man. So Jaden, man, for you, like, what do you think, you know, obviously, like, Cam, you know, the 55-point game, you know, MAC player of the year, average, I think, 24 points per game this year. Where would you rank him over the guy that you've seen come through the MAC, you know, in your past couple of years that you've been covering the league?
Well, Cam Young is probably one of the greatest stories in the MAC, from how he came in and really didn't see the floor much because of the depth in front of him. And when Baker Dunleavy inherited him from Tom Moore, who recruited him, he was able to turn him into an all talent and a player of the year. Just from a development standpoint, he's up there. And probably in the top half of all the players I've seen, there are just too many to mention. I don't want to put a definite number on them because somebody's bound to come at me and say, oh, yo, what about me, Jay? Come on.
Nah, man, I definitely had to give him a shout out, man, or else he's going to get on our case too, man. But I definitely,
yeah, it'll be even worse for you. You guys played with him.
Yeah. Listen, man, we give Cam a hard time all the time, man. He thinks he's the best player to come through the MAC, you know. So I'm sure when he hears this, he'll probably be upset that we didn't throw him in there over all these guys, man. But I don't know, man. Cam, you have to – I don't know, man. You got to see some of these guys overseas, man. I know AJ English is still out there. And
Billy Barron playing Euro League. Billy Barron, yeah, Sean Armand, Scott Machado, all them dudes over there. So they'll probably play in the Euro League somewhere one of these days.
Justin Robinson's in Italy.
Robinson, yep. All them dudes are over there. So, you know, they can still settle those debates for themselves, you know, over there across the water. But this has been awesome, man. Thanks a lot for coming on with us today, man. We appreciate it, and we had a ton of fun, man. So thanks a lot for taking time out of your day to come on and talk some Mac Hoops with us.
All the love, guys. Thank you for giving me the opportunity. Stay safe and stay blessed.
Thanks, so definitely will.
Man. You too, man. We'll cut that butcher soon.
Absolutely.
All righty, there we go. We are back. We want to give a huge thank you to Jaden Daly for coming on with us, man. It was a great conversation. You know, we definitely had some fun with that last segment talking about, you know, all the great players that have came through the MAC, man. I mean, I know we said it on the interview, man, but I mean, I could just remember, you know, watching Billy Barron, man, and playing against AJ English that game our freshman year when we were playing Iona at Quinnipiac, man, and you know, I think it was like a 2-3 point game at half. We went in the locker room all hype, like, yeah, no, we got this, dude. We about to beat Iona. Man, AJ English came out the locker room. I think he went on like an 11-0 run by himself. He hitting threes in transition, getting steals. I mean, he went on a one man like 11-0 run and literally just put that game right to bed before our eyes, man. I mean, I remember guarding Tyron Nelson over those last couple of years at Quinnipiac, man. He was probably the toughest guy that I had to guard in that league, you know. And then of course our teammate Cam Young, you know, we had to make sure we got that in there, man. You know. I think there have been a lot of great players coming to MAC. I don't know, you know, who I would pick for the best player to come through. I think if I had to pick one, I would probably have to go with Billy Barron. You know, no slight to my guy Cam, man, but that guy Billy Barron was disgusting. He's now playing over in the EuroLeague. And I think he's in Serbia this year.
I believe so. I know that's where he was at last year. So I'm not sure if he's still there this year or not.
Yeah, or.
I think, you know, thinking back on the MAC, man, I remember that game against AJ English, man, when he stole the ball from under the basket and, like, retreat dribbled to the left corner and made that three, man. He was definitely definitely something special, man. I'm glad I had the honor to be able to play against him, man, and, you know, say I was able to, lace him up with him, man. I think it's just crazy, man. Like, when I think about the guys that have come through the MAC, I think about a guy like Cassius Robinson, man, and people – don't really understand, man. Like, he left the MAC and then went to Missouri, played with Michael Porter Jr. Obviously, Michael Porter Jr. was, you know, hurt, ain't out that year, man. But he was the first team all SEC selection, man, in a Power 5 conference. And he was in the MAC the year before that, you know, and it was wreaking havoc. You know, even the guy, and I mean, this guy isn't somebody who, you know, maybe wild guys with his one-on-one game or, you know, didn't really wild guys by scoring a lot of points, man. But his career is up there in the MAC, and it's Ricky McGill. I mean, anytime you can win 4 MAC championships, I mean, not too many dudes can say that. You know what I'm saying? And like I said, he wasn't, you know, really wowing guys like a Billy Barron or AJ English, man. But, you know, to be a part of 4 NCAA tournament teams, you know, I believe he scored over 1,300 or 1,500 points at Iona, man. You know, 4-4. You know, his resume says a lot, man. But I mean, when I think about a guy, even like an Antoine Mason, you know, who led the nation to scoring, you know, and then left and went to Auburn, man. I mean, you can go on and on. Teddy Okorafor, another guy, you know, our freshman year who we played against at Ryder, torched the MAC. I mean, he was like a big guard, you know, like, you know, nobody could speed him up. You know, he played at his own pace, man. But I'm pretty sure he torched us when he played us. I'm pretty sure he had like 30. Like
30 that game at Quinnipiac. He had about 30 that game.
Yeah, I had a front row seat to that one. I don't think I played too many minutes that game. You know, so I got to sit and watch that one, man. But, I mean, it's definitely been a lot of guys come through the MAC, man. I also had a front row seat to Cam's 55. I was redshirt in that season. So, you know, being able to sit on the bench and watch the scoreboard go out at Times Union Center, I remember it was crazy being on the bench that game. Nobody really knew how many points he had. Like, we thought he might have had 40, 35, like, you know. But I don't think anybody really thought he had 50 until the game ended. And then I remember, like I said, one of the luxuries of redshirt in that year, you know, we had the box scores coming. So one of our managers, I remember, was like, yo, he got 40, he got 45, he got 50. Like, and I was like, yo, wow, this is nuts, man. But, you know, I don't know, man. Like I said, Cam, you know, if you're listening to this, you're gonna have to go over to Europe and see some of these dudes, man. You gotta see Billy Barron. You know what I'm saying? You gotta see AJ English, man. And, you know, we'll be tuning into them games, man. But like I said, man, Sean Armand's over there, man. It's a lot of dudes over in Europe you're gonna have to see. You know, and like I said, if you can get the best of them, then maybe I'll put you at, you know, at number one, man. But I don't know, man.
Hey, man, I don't know, man. I'm going to give my guy Camp some respect, you know what I'm saying? Especially if they playing one-on-one, you know what I'm saying? I don't know if them dudes beating them one-on-one. 5-on-5, you know what I'm saying? It might get a little spooky, you know what I'm saying? Because we know Billy Bear might got about 30, 40 of them overseas, man. But one-on-one, I might like Cam over all them dudes, you know what I'm saying?
One-on-one?
You said what?
You like Cam over Asia English, one-on-one?
That'd be a tough matchup, man. That'll be a tough matchup. AJ got a lot of his bag. Kane got a lot of his bag too. You know what I'm saying? I would definitely pay to see that. You know what I'm saying? If Cam wanna come out to the East Coast, you know what I'm saying, next summer, we know the ones was popping this summer, you know what I'm saying? So if Cam wants to come out here and play some ones, you know what I'm saying, I'll put some bread on him, you know what I'm saying? I'll put a few dollars on my boy.
Okay. I heard you, man. Hey, Cam, man, like I said, you gotta could be stay at our Baltimore, man. AJ English from Delaware, that's right up the road, man. We can set this one-on-one game up, man. You know, it's going to be a battle of who can get the most stops, man. So, you know, we'll have to see. But, nah, man, that was tons of fun, man. I think that, you know, obviously there's been a lot of great players in the MAC. You know, I think, you know, obviously we also touched on some of these teams, man. And, you know, Siena's obviously going to get started this weekend, man. So, I'm really excited to see what they look like, you know, coming off of this shutdown. Hopefully Quinnipiac can get back going as well, man. But, you know, I think that St. Peter's, if I had to choose one team that's kind of impressed me the most, I think I would have to go with them, man. I think that, you know, Shane Holloway has done a great, great job, man. If you guys have not tuned into our last interview with Shane Holloway, make sure you go back and tune into episode 4. A lot of gems were dropped on that episode, man. We touched on a lot of things. So make sure you have not streamed that episode, so go back and listen to that. But yeah, man, I think that if I had to pick one team, I would pick St. Peter's to kind of be, you know, the team that's looked the best thus far in the MAC.
Yeah, St. Peter's definitely probably the team that has looked the best. I mean, I think that them and Monmouth have really impressed me early on. I think those two are probably the two best teams in the league right now since we haven't seen Siena. But I want to give Marist a shout out, man. I mean, I did not expect Marist to go to Drottny Gymnasium and sweep Manhattan. I mean, that was probably the most surprising result of the MAC thus far. I mean, obviously we had Coach Mastriello and his crew on here earlier, man. And you know, I think you know Drew and I definitely were both high on them. So and Marist now sitting at 3-1 in the MAC, so they're tied for first place with you know Iona, St. Peter's, and Monmouth. So I definitely want to give Marist some love, man. Those guys have been playing extremely well. John Dunn is an extremely great coach. You know, those guys are always you know gritty. His team at St. Peter's were always really, really good defensively. So, you know, I want to see, you know, what they're going to be able to do. They have a weekend series versus Niagara this weekend. So if they can come out of that weekend with at least a split, you know, they'd be sitting at 4-2 and they'd be in pretty good shape. I mean, the game's in Poughkeepsie. So if they were able to sweep that series and get to 5-1, then I think we really have to start considering them to be one of the best teams in the conference.
No, for sure, man. Like I said, I don't want Coach Service to get on us again, man. So I definitely got to give him some love, man. I think that, you know, one thing he said, man, they're going to keep working, man, and they want to earn it, you know. So, hey, Coach, man, I know if you're listening to this, man, you guys are definitely going to have opportunity, to, man, to get that one done, man. And people going to put some respect on Marist, on the ref boxes. You know, if you guys can, you know, get this weekend series over Niagara, you know, Niagara was a team who was picked, I believe, in the top 5 in the preseason. Obviously, we know what Marcus Hammond is going to bring to the table. You know, first team All-MAC selection last year, preseason first team All-MAC selection this year, man. So I think if Marist was able to get 2 wins over Niagara, I think that would definitely put them in a little different conversation going forward.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, Niagara historically is not great on the road. I mean, they're really tough at home, but when they go on the road, they're not the same team, you know. And that's no disrespect to Niagara. I mean, obviously we know that they're a solid team with a lot of great players. But I definitely think Marist can at least get one game, you know what I'm saying? If not two, you know what I'm saying? So I think we'll have to wait and see, you know, what happens in the MAC this weekend. I'm definitely looking forward to it. But now, man, it's time for our favorite segment here on the Auto Bid, man. The craziest thing we saw all week. I know Drew's been holding out early on in the episode to give us this one. So, Drew, man, what was the craziest thing you saw this week in college basketball?
Yeah, man. I mean, so, you know, I already mentioned how tough it is to get a win at Vermont. Obviously, you know, Vermont has been, you know, the pride of the American East. And, you know, they beat NJIT pretty handily the first game. And the second game, man, NJIT's Santonio Brinson is able to win it at the buzzer on a completely broken play. Like, I don't know if anybody's seen it, but, you know, they inbound the ball. You know, they drive it baseline on the right wing. Dude slips and falls down. You know, throws a failed pass back to the wing. Dude shoots like a fadeaway, you know, three from the right wing. Air balls it, and dudes come out of nowhere and tips it in with probably, I mean, it looked like it was like 0.1 left on the clock. You know, for a win, they were down one. I mean, I think that was the craziest thing that I saw, just because, you know, as a player, man, and being in those moments, man, it's like, yo, like, you defend so well, at, you know, if you're Vermont, man, like, literally, like, you play your heart out, and for the game to end that way on a tip, man, it's like, oh, like, you have one letdown, dude misses one box out, and you lose, man, a game that went to double overtime, you know, 50 minutes. You know, I want to shout out Zach Cooks, you know, from NJIT, man, because he played 50 minutes. And I just saw, I was on NJIT's Twitter page, and I saw, like, a crazy stat, dude. I'm going to have to pull this up, you know, so I can give it to you guys, man. But so here it is, man. Zach Cooks is averaging 41 minutes per game. Now, this is for people who don't understand. There's only 40 minutes in the college basketball game. So he's averaging 41 minutes per game this season. So he has 26 career games with at least 40 minutes played. At least 40 minutes played, 26 games in his career. And like I said, he played all 50 minutes in that game versus Vermont. So, I mean, that's tough to do. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I think it's a feat in and of itself to be averaging 41 minutes per game in a game where you only play 40 minutes. You know, obviously that 50-minute game obviously factored into that performance, man. But, you know, he's a guy who's averaging over 18 points per game. He averaged 19.7, basically 20 points per game last year, man. So for him to be able to, you know, have that level of production and playing that many minutes, I mean, I know he's in impeccable shape to be able to do that, man. But for the crazy thing I saw, man, NJIT, you know, being able to pull out that win at the buzzer in dramatic fashion, crazy thing that I saw this week, man. So shout out to you guys at NJIT. Also, they have a PSA Hoops alum in Makai Gray, who also is over there at NJIT, man. So shout out to you guys.
Yeah, not for sure. Zach Cooks is a bucket, man. I remember, you know, my senior year when we played in the CIT at Quinnipiac, and that dude was there, and I mean, he was getting to it that year. I think that was his sophomore year, I want to say. You know, now seeing him as a senior, getting to it the way he is. I mean, he's currently second in the league in scoring. He's averaging, you know, 18.8, just under 19 a game this year. I think, you know, he might be in position to potentially win player of the year in that league. I think he might be the best player in that conference. I mean, I think, obviously, Vermont with Steph Smith. I mean, I think it's going to come down to who wins the league, because, like I said earlier, Stony Brook is right now in first place, but their leading scorer averages 13 points a game. So if NJIT messes around and finishes in the top two or top three, and Cooks is averaging 20 a game, how do you not give him player of the year? You know what I'm saying? So, you know, I think that guy could definitely be, you know, the best player in that league, man. And I think NJIT is a team that is definitely going to be tough to beat down the stretch, man. And that buzzer beater was crazy too, man. We've seen a couple buzzer beaters at VA. Shout out my guy, Jarrett Lyles, with that big time buzzer beater that he hit to send UMBC to the tournament at Vermont a few years ago, man. So anytime you can win at that place, as you said earlier, Drew, it's extremely hard to win there. Definitely is crazy. So huge shout out to NJIT, man. We want to talk about other games of the week, though, man. As always, we're gonna give you guys some games to look forward to this weekend, man. And, I think that this weekend we're going to be spoiled, man. I mean, obviously last weekend with Christmas, there weren't very many good games. But this week, I mean, there are just a plethora of amazing games, man. One of them is going on as we speak right now, Chattanooga and Furman, 57-55 ball game right now. Furman is up 2. I mean, this game is going to be one that's going to be stuck on a lot of people's calendars just as far as the SoCon goes, man. And there's a bunch of good games in the SoCon this weekend. Furman, we're going to see Furman and Mercer on Saturday. We're also going to see East Tennessee State and UNCG on Saturday. So both of those games in the SoCon are going to have some major implications on the standings, man. As you guys know who watch this podcast, man, the SoCon is one of our favorite conferences, man. That, I mean, it's one of the best mid-major leagues
in the country, man. I mean, Furman and Mercer are both ranked top 20 in the mid-major college insider poll. So both of those teams are extremely good, man. Mercer is really good as well. UNCG was picked to win the league. They're really good. And, of course, ETSU, who last year is, you know, coming off a 30-win season. Tonight, Wednesday night, one of my favorite games in college basketball, Murray State-Belmont. I mean, that's a game out of the OVC that is always an amazing, amazing rivalry. So definitely make sure you guys tune in tonight. You know, matter of fact, as you're watching this podcast, go ahead and tune into that Murray State-Belmont game. You know what I'm saying? Make sure you guys tune in. That's going to be a great game out of the OVC. And then as well, we're going to have Winthrop and Campbell. They're playing today and tomorrow. Winthrop is quietly 5-0, and they beat this Furman team that we're so high on by 16 points. So Winthrop is an extremely good team out of the Big South. They're looking like they could be the early favorites in that league. So I want to make sure we give Winthrop some love. One of my guys, Jermaine Ukebu, is an alumni of Winthrop. I think he's on the coaching staff now as a GA over there. So definitely want to give Winthrop some love. They have a big game, this big series today and tomorrow with Campbell. Heading over to the Atlantic Sun, you're going to see Liberty and Lipscomb Friday and Saturday. Liberty is an amazing team. They've already beaten two SEC opponents in South Carolina and Mississippi State this season. I mean, they're looking like the favorites in the Atlantic Sun, but Lipscomb is also extremely good. Those are probably the two best teams in that league, in my opinion. I think Lipscomb got picked to win or to finish top either first or second in that conference. So we're going to see those guys battle it out this weekend, Friday and Saturday. Another series of games Friday, Saturday, we're going to see Charlotte and Western Kentucky out of Conference USA. Charlotte is a team that is sneaky good as well, man. They have two wins over A-10 programs in Davidson and GW. We know how good of a team Davidson is. We talked about them a lot in this podcast earlier as well. So they're going to play Western Kentucky, who, as we know, is extremely good. They've already beaten Memphis, Alabama, Northern Iowa, and URI. So Charlotte and Western Kentucky are going to play this weekend. Great game out of Conference USA. And then we're going to the A-10. St. Bonnie's is going to play Richmond this Saturday. Obviously, St. Bonaventure has only played two games this season, but if you watch this podcast, you know that Drew and I are seeing the high on that team with those two PSA alums over there at St. Bonaventure's. And Richmond, of course, is one of the best teams in the country. One of the best teams in the A-10. Those are probably two of my top four or five teams in that league. They're going to play Friday. And then, of course, the long-awaited arrival of the Siena Saints to the college basketball season, man. They're playing Monmouth Sunday and Monday. That's going to be a great weekend series out of the night. Those are two of the top three teams in that league at this moment, if you ask me. Top four, obviously, Siena hasn't played yet. But that's going to be a ton of fun this weekend. You're going to get Monmouth and Siena Sunday and Monday. And then, of course, the Patriot League. They are getting their season underway this weekend. They of course, have said that they weren't going to play any games until January. This weekend, it will be January, and it will be time for some Patriot League basketball. So make sure you guys go ahead and watch those games. BU has picked to win that league. They're opening their season up against Holy Cross on Sunday and Monday. So make sure you guys go ahead and watch some Patriot League hoops this weekend.
Yeah, man. I think, going back to Liberty, man, I got to give a shout out, to my guy, Darius McGee, man. I'm going to give you guys a little nugget, man. I'm going to give a shout out to my guy, Ricky Goings. Everyone deserves a shot. EDOS for short. We've been doing this, man. We've been hosting Bump. And I remember this dude, Darius McGee, man, who's Liberty's leading scorer right now. He's averaging almost 15 a game, 4 rebounds, man. Came to the gym a couple times, man, and played with us when he was a youngin'. Like, I'm talking about he was probably like 2-3 years younger than everybody in the gym, man. He's, just going through the motions or whatever. And then after, everybody chilling, this dude picks the ball up and starts throwing lobs to himself and just boom, boom, windmill, reverse. Like, I mind you, this dude isn't that tall. Like, I mean, this at this point, I think he's grown now, but he wasn't that tall back then, man. He's a point guard, but back then, he's probably like 5'10", something like that, man. Dunking the ball crazy, man. And, he's leading this Liberty squad right now in scoring, man. Obviously, they're 8-3. Liberty's always, a tournament team, man. So I got to give a shout-out to my guy, Darius McGee, man. Keep doing what you're doing. Shout-out to my guy, Rick Goings, at EDOS, man, for putting the bump together, man. Some legendary bump, man, back in the day, man. A lot of guys, you know, Markelle Fultz came through the bump a couple of times, man. A lot of NBA guys, high major guys, D1 guys, man, that just came through that bump, man. So it's crazy, man, when you see guys like this, man, who were kind of afterthoughts, you know, at the bump, man. Now it's just like, you know, dudes is at the pinnacle of, you know, mid-major basketball, man. Probably going to be in the NCAA tournament this year. You know, hopefully dunking and giving buckets to a lot of high major teams.
Yeah, for sure, man. Those bumps definitely used to be legendary, man. Miss them eat-ass runs. Hopefully we can get some more of those, you know, post-COVID, now that everybody's playing overseas and G League and NBA and everything. Hopefully we can get some good bumping, man. The DMV is the basketball capital of the world. I don't care who told you otherwise. You know what I'm saying? If you're listening to this, DMV is the basketball capital of the world. We had the best players. Yeah, I said what I said. So if anybody listening that does not agree, you can mention me on Twitter. We can go ahead and have a friendly debate, which you will lose. But, you know, I just gotta get that off my chest, man. You know, that does it for another episode of the Auto Bid. Man, we want to thank you guys again for listening to us, man. Make sure you guys hit that like button, subscribe, give us a rating, man. Make sure you guys, you know, are telling a friend, tell a friend about our podcast, man. We want to keep on growing this thing, man. We appreciate each and every viewer, each and every listener. If you're not following us already, make sure you're following us on social media at All Facts Media. We are on Twitter, Instagram, YouTube. AllFactsMediaInc.com is our website. Of course, obviously, our podcasts are here on Spotify and Apple, man. So make sure you guys are tuning in to all of our content, man. We if you watch college basketball, if you like college basketball, there's no other place to get all your content than All Facts Media, man. So we're going to go ahead and let my guy Pull Up Tay take us out with some tunes as always. And until next time, folks. What's the topic of discussion? What we talking about? Take your best shot. I'm going to take the last shot. I'm drawing in the clutch, boy. Take.